Moikka!
Hey!
Welcome to our podcast, Mastering Finland.
I'm Jean and I'm from California.
I'm Petra and I'm from the Czech Republic.
We're here to chat about our life in Finland.
Hello everybody, welcome to our podcast again. Today I would like to introduce Fola Shadi, with whom I'll be talking about autism and all the stuff related to being a parent of a child with autism. So I would like to welcome you, Fola Shadi. Thank you so much for coming. Welcome to our podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
So could you at first tell us a bit about yourself?
I am Fola Shadi, I am Nigerian, but I have lived in Finland for 8 years, and I am mom to a 6-year-old girl who was diagnosed with autism. We got the diagnosis just before she turned 4 years old, although the assessment started before then. And she has a younger sister now as well.
Okay, wow. Thank you so much. So, did you know what autism is before your child was born, or did you get to learn when your child got diagnosed afterwards?
I'd say that her symptoms started to show while I was learning about autism, because then I was taking a course that would enable me to be able to be an early childhood educator here in Finland. And then we were learning about childhood disability. And so it was during the course, and we were talking about autism. And then I just realized that, wait, hold on, these symptoms are beginning to look like my daughter. And then I remember that I asked my teacher then that, do you think my child could be autistic? And of course, I was putting that on the spot, and she said, no, I mean, I can't just say that your child is autistic. So, but basically, I would like to also say that I have learned more about it when we got the diagnosis. So I'll just say that I'd heard about it and just knew about it, but I have learned more over time. Just because we have the diagnosis.
Yeah. So what you said, that you were learning at it about the course and you saw some similarities. So what were the similarities that you saw between the stuff that you were learning about and your daughter?
Okay, like the very first thing that we noticed was that when she turned about a year and it was about 14, 15 months old, that she wasn't answering to her name. And it's funny that it was my mom that noticed, actually. We didn't even notice, because the first child, and so we didn't really pay attention that much to notice that she wasn't answering her name. So it was when we visited my mom. We traveled and we visited my mom. So it was during that visit that my mom called my attention, and she said, do you call her another name other than her name? Like, do you use a nickname? And then I said, no, we don't. We call her by her name. And then she said, don't you notice that when you call her name, she doesn't really react immediately to her name? And that's when it dawned on me that, oh, really? And I started to pay more attention. So it took my mom, calling her and seeing that she wasn't answering and then calling our attention to it. So that was the very first symptom. And then when we got back home, I actually started to do the test as well. And I noticed that truly, she could just be in her own world. And when you call her by her name, she would not respond. And also, she liked to play with the same kind of toys. She didn't like dolls. I remember also that during the visit, I was even telling my mom that, see, don't bother buying her dolls. She doesn't like to play with the regular things that little girls like to play with, because I had bought her so many, but she didn't have interest. She liked to play with cars. And so it was the same thing, arranging them. So So that was another symptom that we saw, like the same toy, and she didn't like for you to take her away from that. She didn't easily change from one plaything to another. She liked to play by herself, enjoyed her own company. And then also, although she started trying to respond, to use words, like, you know, when you say something, like trying to repeat words, but then she digressed and lost that ability along the line. So those were some of the early signs that we noticed that then made us realize that we need to start asking questions.
Yeah, these are quite a typical signs. For those who are listening right now, I've worked with kids with autism quite a lot, and I've written both of my thesis, bachelor and master's thesis, on autism. So I sort of hope that I know a bit, or I should know a bit about this topic. And that's why I'm so happy that I get to talk to you, Falashadi, today. So after you've seen this few little things and you started thinking a bit more about it, what was the next step? Did you contact Neuvola? Or what did you do?
Yes, that's what I did. I called her nurse at Neuvola, and I expressed my concerns that, see, now my daughter is about a year and a half and she's no longer trying to use words, that she's not even calling me mommy or calling her dad daddy yet. And then I also said that she's not answering to her name, that now I am worried. And I explained to her how, you know, during the visit, I noticed that, and how much I have also done my own findings and watched her over time. At first, her nurse was saying, no, you don't have to worry about it. It's because you speak many languages. She's exposed to three languages. And so it's common with children who are multilingual to have a delay in speech. Yes, that made sense. And so when she said that, I felt like, oh, well, she's right. Maybe I'm just worrying for nothing. And so I waited a bit. But after a while again, still because she wasn't answering to her name and she was not attempting to, because I mean, I was waiting to hear her call me mommy. I was already waiting to see. She going to say mommy first or daddy? So I called again and said, you know what? Now I really am worried because I don't know if this is just the language thing or if she cannot hear, and that I would like us to have a visit, you know, scheduled. And eventually she agreed. And during the visit, I made her see all the things I was saying. And then I told her that I wanted her to have her ears checked. But at least let us know if our daughter cannot hear, then we know how to help her if she's not answering to her name. And she said, okay. But she thinks that there's nothing wrong. She was just trying to let me know that I should be calm. But I mean, for a mom, when you know that your child should hit certain milestones at that age, it's only normal to be concerned. Anyway, I insisted on having her ears checked, and then she booked an appointment for us. The doctor checked her. We had a doctor visit. Her ears were checked, and everything was perfect. He said none of the ears has any issues. Nothing. That both ears are working fine. And then I said, okay, well, if her ears are working fine, something is not right. And that's when they then referred us to the central hospital. And then our journey of being assessed literally started from there. But one other thing that made me also know that it wasn't a problem of our ears is because when you call her by her name, she doesn't answer. But if you have like a pack of candy or something, and then, you know, when the paper ruffles, once she hears the sound of candy, she would run towards the direction, which means she can pick sounds. Or if she's somewhere else and you play a cartoon and that is something she likes, she will run towards the sound. So at least that way I knew that, okay, she can pick sounds and truly she's not deaf. And that's when we started the journey at the Central Hospital.
Yeah, wow. That is quite a long journey, and it is surprising to me that they did not refer you straight away to at least to the hearing check, because
exactly, yeah. That's, you're right. I, you know, when I think about it, I wondered so that why wasn't the nurse being proactive? I literally had to be on her neck and insist that let us go for book this appointment for us, that if you want to be, then I'm going to go straight to the hospital myself. It's a visit. At least let's go. If they say everything is fine, you know, everything is fine. And I have heard one or two parents actually say that they have nurses who told them the same. Mm. It's understandable that even if you're trying to calm the parents down and you don't want them to be worried, but at least start a process while you're trying to calm them down. Don't try to dissuade them or make them feel like they don't have a reason to be worried when it's obvious that they are worried. So it's okay to want to allay their fears, but still be proactive about it.
Yeah, definitely. And also because so much of development happens within the first 3 years. And, you know, and until the 6 years, then it's like, or 5 years approximately, mm-hmm. that's the most important part of the child's life when it comes to language, when it comes to all the development. And if there is something wrong and there is no diagnosis and you don't know what to do and how to approach and teach the child to speak or do any other stuff that the child might struggle with, mm-hmm. It is really not helpful, and it's really hard to catch up afterwards. So that is, I think, one positive part of the diagnosis. Even though I know that Finland is now a bit of on the fence that they say, because I've done some courses at the University of Jyväskylä related to special needs, and they try to sort of not distinguish that much. I would say that they sort of offer this general support to child that struggles with something. However, in case of autism, I think it is very important to provide all the support that you need, that there is the structure and anything that could help to promote the development of the child and the child's skills. So that is something that...
Yes, you are right. Yeah. Because early intervention is very, very key when it comes to autism. So the longer you wait or delay, you are losing time in being able to help that child to quickly get the support that they need. So you are very correct about that. And I would also like to say that in fairness to the system in Finland, well, at least in my own city, they've been quite supportive, if I must say. At least eventually when the process started, when the nurse eventually, you know, referred us to the doctor, to the pediatrician, and from the Atnelvola, and then from there to the Central Hospital, when the assessment eventually started, they started to do everything that they could to help us to have her ears checked again. She went for the brain scan. She had to see a speech therapist, occupational therapist, and all of that. So eventually when we got the referral, decided to do all of that to be able to find out what the problem was and how best to support. And one of the good things that I appreciate about the system is that while the assessment was going on, before they eventually gave us the diagnosis, we had access to a developmental counselor who stepped in as an early intervention counselor for us. So she started the process of helping her with her speech and learning some life skills pending when our diagnosis eventually came fully.
Mm-hmm. That is actually the next thing I wanted to ask about, because I was quite interested about these sort of services, because unless you are, you know, close to somebody with autism or you really get into the services, you don't really know about it. But because I am basically professionally trained to do this job back from my country, that's why I was very interested, because as you said, this developmental intervention, it is really good that you got this support. And I'm really glad to hear that you were provided with this support and you got help and assistance with what you have to do and what you should do to help your daughter out and help with the learning of the skills or practicing of the skills. So that is really good, yes, to hear. Did you get any other social services support throughout the journey?
Oh, yes, we did. And one of the lines, I'd also say that our developmental counselor, I don't know if others are like that, but anyway, the one that was assigned to us, she was just like heaven sent. She was super helpful because many times I wouldn't even have known where to go to. Then I think one of the things that needs to change anyway is you would have so many forms to fill. You just have to keep filling forms to KELA, forms to social service, forms to these. So many paperwork that if she wasn't such a helpful person, I really don't know how I would have coped anyway. But I mean, she made it easier for me to be able to know what to do, where to turn to, and exactly how to go about it. For instance, the child has, well, when you get your diagnosis, there are a couple of supports you get based on the doctor's recommendation, because your paper from the doctor comes with the kind of support that your child would need and the number of hours and other things like that. And then in addition, for instance, KELA has, they call it VAMAISTUKI, supports, disability support, yes, for the child. They have for under 16 years old, and I think they have for above 16 years old. So it's a lot of paperwork where you have to fill. And that paperwork, basically, they'll ask you lots of questions. And most of the things you'll be writing would have to be the things that your child struggles with. So the more that they think that your child is, the more struggle that they think your child has, or how much support that your child needs. There are like three categories of, the support is in three categories. So the lesser the support your child needs, then the lesser that of that money that the support money that you get. And then the more your child needs, the more you would, because for instance, you would have to say if your child needs things, for instance, maybe it's a child that needs wheelchair, because it's a general disability thing. But then the kind of disability that it falls on, when you fill the form, they then decide if your child is in the first, second, or the third category. Then, other than that, what else? You also get support from social, for instance, where if your child needs to spend extra care hours, so that there's also a decision that can come from there to help you so that your child can get extra hours, for instance, in the daycare center, and you wouldn't have to pay for those extra hours, because normally you pay for daycare, but then when you get that particular decision from the social services, from it's actually like the disability services of social, then that decision also helps you to be able to let your child have longer hours where they can, especially where the child is struggling with, you know, interaction, so that they can spend longer hours at the daycare, mm-hmm. and then you wouldn't have to pay any. The government takes care of that for you.
Yeah.
Then another support I also have gotten, when I had my second child and it was a bit overwhelming for me, there is also this family workers, parents who take care. They also are available for you where the can come to the house to give you some support so that you as the mother, you can rest, have some time for yourself. If you want to go shopping or you want to go to the spa, or you just want to have time for yourself, and then they can stay with your child and you can have some time for yourself. Or they can just come home and keep you company, even if you don't want to go anywhere, playing with the children, and you can just be there doing other things you want to do in the house. So that also is one support that I have found really helpful, especially when I had my second child.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I bet you didn't know about anything like that before your counselor helped you and informed you that such services exist, right?
No, I didn't. know about them. So she was the one that was telling me, okay, see, there's this thing called Bama's Bible, for instance, by Alec, below 16 years old, disability support from Keller. I didn't even know that was a thing. Although they would explain it to you, there's another, during the assessment, there's a social worker that would also talk to you as a parent and tell you the things that you have access to. What they tell you, and then they give you a pamphlet where you can read up on all those things. But it still helps when somebody holds your hand step by step that, okay, this one, this is what it means, and this is what you can do. You know, this one, this is what it means, and this is what you can do to get it, and all of that. So it really helps to have somebody hold your hands through the process, even though they tell you, okay, this is here, you can go here, you can go there.
Yeah, definitely. And I especially think that when, I don't know how it was in your case, and I'm just getting ready to ask you, but some parents get through a shock sort of state when they can't really, perceive much information, and to even if somebody tells them stuff and doesn't really show them how or support them with it straightly, they might not be able to just get in the information because they are still going through the shock of getting diagnosed, their children getting diagnosed, and it is just really hard period. Of course, individual people, but I remember that during my studies, we've learned about this. How do you inform the parents about the diagnosis? And then you have to expect that they might be going through a shock. So you might really need to, especially the first time, not give too much information and just say the basics, mm-hmm. because they might not be even able to ask questions if that happens.
Yeah.
So how was it for you?
Even though I said that I was learning, and I said, wait, this thing I am learning now, is this what my child is about? But so when the diagnosis eventually came, the first thing I experienced was some sort of fear. How am I going to cope with this journey? Where are we going to start from? So the most difficult part is always acceptance. That, and then, from also because during the process of learning that you've heard that this thing, it's not like it doesn't have any cure. And so, the first thing was fear. In fact, my husband was in denial for a really long time. Even after I accepted for him, it took a longer time for him to accept that. That diagnosis is about our daughter. He would just say, no, there's nothing wrong with her. They're just speaking, it's just the time. They're just saying their own. She will do all these things when she's ready. So it took a longer time for him to accept. So acceptance is always the most difficult part for a lot of parents. How to come to terms with knowing that it's a lifetime thing. Then you start to wonder, where am I going to start from? How am I going to cope on this journey? Especially for people like us, where family is far away, and then you begin to wonder, how am I going to do this, when your family isn't near? So yes, acceptance isn't usually very, very, very easy. But eventually, when you then come to terms with it, and in terms of acceptance, another thing that also exists, which is one of the things that I've mentioned to the few parents that I have eventually found on the journey, is there's some courses for parents where they actually teach you more as a parent. Because for many people too, if I wasn't in that course, then autism would be something I just heard on the street but never really understand what it is. So that course then is for parents to be able to understand what autism is, what you can do to help your child. And then I think the highlight of it for me is also being able to meet other parents and feeling that you are not alone on the journey, because you see how their child looks so much like your own child. And in that particular space, nobody's judging anybody because it's the same thing that we are all dealing with. So that's another thing that Finland has to. I mean, that course is a really amazing, amazing thing, I must say. So I advise that parents who get their new diagnosis should explore going for asking about the courses that are available to them and attending them.
Yeah, that is a very good recommendation, because having a support group of people who are going through the similar situation as you are, especially when it comes to having a child with disability, whatever it might be, I think, because nobody else can really understand as much as the parents. Because even I, as you know, I've learned about it and I've worked with kids, but I am not a parent of a child with autism. So there are certain aspects I would probably never be able to, you know, like get the feel of as the parents get and can support each other. And it is really good that you found this supporting sort of group of parents around you as well. Are there also any, you said support group, I just wanted to ask you about, have you experienced any situations in public space when somebody has, you know, looked like weirdly at your child, that because of some, you know, unusual aspect of behavior and so on? Has it ever happened to you? Some sort of judgment that you've seen all around you in a public spaces?
Yes, and one that readily comes to mind is one that happened when we went to the library. And that one is really the first that I remember, because it was the first one that also happened. You know, we were in the library, the children's section. I had taken her there to play in the children's section and read some books. And of course, she has sensory overload, so she wouldn't sit in one place. So she was basically all over the place, playing by herself, but also, you know, going from one spot to the other, not staying in one space. And there was a lady there who just struck a conversation with me. And she's Finn, but she says she took, well, like, while we spoke, she said she doesn't live in our city, that she lives in like a few kilometers away, but she would usually come drive into the city with her children. And she noticed that my daughter was all over the place while we spoke, and then she asked me that, she asked me if she's the only child I have, and I said yes. And then she said, oh, lucky you, because this one that you have is already like three children. And I really didn't know what to make of that statement, but I just didn't say anything. And then along the line, at some point, I don't know, my daughter just took interest in her daughter, which was quite unusual to for some, because she usually doesn't play with other children. And so she went near this woman's daughter and tried to play with her. She had some blocks in front of her and tried to play with her. And that, for me, that was even like, you know, a something to be happy about. And hey, see, my daughter is picking interest in another child. But, you know, this woman said to me, I said, hey, please, can you tell your child to go away from my daughter? Like, can you just tell her to go away from her? And it's funny that her daughter didn't even mind. Like, you could see she was just sitting there. And, you know how two children would just sit in front of the same toy. And this woman told me that, after, you know, of course, after she had made that comment about my daughter being all over the place and, you know, acting, one child acting like three children. And then she said that she didn't want my child to play with hers. So I quietly took my child, you know, aside. I was hot, but I didn't even have anything to say to her, really. I felt it was just ignorance. And so I took my child away from beside her child, since she didn't want her to play with her. But the funny thing was then that after I took my child away and, you know, told her, showed her somewhere else to play, she wanted to continue to have a conversation with me, like nicely, like nothing happened. And then I said, no, that's not happening. If my child can't play with your child, then you and I cannot be having a conversation either. So I just, you know, let her side, and that was just it. Like, no, you can't be, I don't want to use the word, for lack of a better word, not nasty, but you get my point. You can't be not nice to my child and then expect that you can be nice to me because I am calm and we can have a conversation. But because my child is the way she is, then you can say, you know, that about my child. Usually, and it's funny that usually I would have come in my child, you know, defending my child and all that. But I don't know, maybe that day I was just in a good mood and I just wasn't ready for her ignorance. I just took my child by the arm and I said, hey, let's go away from here. This woman doesn't want you to play with her child. And so mommy too does not want to have a conversation with her. Of course, my daughter doesn't understand that, but it was an indirect way of letting the woman get the message and we left. But subsequently after that, I wouldn't say that I have had, well, at least not up front to my face, like that one happened. But what I have learned to do over time is to educate people. So when we go into a space and if my daughter, you know, starts to be herself in the space, I explain to the people there, hey, my daughter is autistic and this and this and these are some of the ways that she expresses herself. So I literally educate people that may not know about it. And so far that has worked. Sometimes what I also do is before, if I think that we're going to have some triggers, you know, maybe sensory triggers and all that, before that happens at all, I tell, for instance, maybe if we are traveling, so as soon as we get on the plane, if we can't get a seat by ourselves, I explain to whoever is going to be with us that, hey, my daughter is autistic and this flight may, you know, make her have some triggers and this and this and this is what will happen. So I give them heads up. And so if for any reason that happens, it doesn't take them by surprise because I have already explained the situation to them. And for me, that has saved me a lot of maybe ugly stares from people that would have been like, can't she control her child? You know, because I already explained the situation to them. So that's what I've just learned to do, to educate people. It's not easy, but then the people that will understand, and people who will not understand, you'll decide not to understand, and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, definitely. But I think this is like an amazing approach and the way to go, because the unfortunate thing with autism is that it's not a visible disability. It's not like if somebody is in a wheelchair or has Down syndrome that you can straight away see that there is, you know, this thing is there. Because with autism, as you said, some people can just think that, yeah, this lady can't control her child, which is not true. But I think this is like the best way that you can really approach it. And it's very good that you are educating people, because people should know about it. Now it should be sort of, you know, a normal thing that people have heard about it, because there's more and more children with autism born. And it's not anymore, you know, a taboo or any something that children with autism would be hidden away as such. However, Finland is still quite, you know, low population country, which means that there are not that as many children with autism as there are probably in other countries where the population is higher. So that is something that definitely makes a difference.
Yes, that's correct. But the only other thing, which of course is not peculiar to Finland, that I forgot to mention, when you get to diagnosis, is the long wait for therapy. It's usually a long wait. For instance, we didn't get a speech therapist until about 11 months later. And I've even heard some people say they've waited longer than that. So for us, for instance, we got one year doctor's report that she can have access to speech therapy, and we didn't get, you know, a therapist until that report was, you know, going to be outdated, because usually they renew it every year. So imagine we have 6 months of therapies and we found the person at the 11th month, just before that particular report was going to go obsolete. So the long wait is really long. Before, I also found an occupational therapist for her, so it was. I can't even start to. You know, let me tell you how much for me, and I even think that's even big. For me, I also think it's because I was also a very proactive parent. if I was a parent who was just going to wait, because they'll tell you, don't worry, you're on the line, you're on queue. And so if you just take that as an answer and wait, you may even wait longer. But every time I was calling, it got to a point that sometimes some of the providers, when they pick the phone and they hear my name, one of them said, "Madam, don't worry, we have your child's name on our list. We will contact you. We will contact you." You know, so that's how much I was calling, you know. So in fact, at some point when I said my name and they said, "Oh, I remember you," I start to laugh, you know. Even though I was worried, but the moment they say they remember me, I start to laugh, because then it tells me that, okay, that's how much I am trying to find support for my child. So, and I know that, of course, not every parent can be like that, but I just didn't want to sit down and fold my hand, because I knew that time was of the essence. So I wanted her to start getting that support as soon as possible. But like I said, the developmental counselor really helped, because when we eventually found therapists almost a year after, she had done a lot for us. Like, she had really, really done a lot. That if she wasn't there for us, I mean, in the early stages would have probably been harder than it was. So for that, I'm really thankful.
Yeah. I mean, the waiting times in general in Finland for such services, you know, even psychology as a therapy, even for adults, you know, all the, as you say, speech therapy and all these sort of, you know, services that should be available to everybody when needed. There are such long waiting times for those, and those are the most essential services that should be there for the people living in the country. But yeah, hopefully, you know, this is going to become the priority of the government to support it and provide more, hopefully, positions, and so everybody can have the care they need and deserve to get better and get the support that they need. But I'm glad that you eventually got to get the speech therapist, and that's the most important. But yeah, 11 months is a very, very long time. It's unbelievable.
It is a long time. It is. And it's funny that when you hear other parents, you know, share their own story too. In fact, it then makes me feel like 11 months was short, you know, because I've had people say that for 2 years they've been waiting to have a speech therapy. So it's probably also that probably the demand is becoming more than the supply. And, you know, because this is also not something that you can work with a child for 3 months or something and then you move on. So it's a continuous thing. Really, you will go for assessment and they will still need. So maybe sometimes, because it's a continuous thing, a particular therapist may still have the same number of children that they still have year in, year out, until maybe one child is good enough to be by himself, and then another child, they can take on another child. So that makes the waiting longer. And then I also think, depending on the city, some cities don't have that many therapists, while some have many and may have lots of options. For us here, the options are not many. So sometimes when somebody eventually takes your child, you're just happy that finally you found someone and that you can work with eventually. So I think maybe what they can do is maybe find ways to maybe people to train people more, or if people will be interested in, you know, studying in that area, so that we can have more people who are able to make the waiting shorter.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. I mean, I could talk to you for another 2 hours and ask you 10 million tiny little questions. But I think for a general listener, this is probably quite already specific information. Mm-hmm. But is there any advice that you would give to a parent that just got a child diagnosed with autism, or they suspect that their child might have autism?
What I would say is that if you're a parent and you suspect that your child might have autism, when you start to notice the signs like, oh, my child is not making eye contact, my child wants to play with a specific toy, my child will not communicate with other people, my child will not answer to his or her name. You know, those early signs, when you start to notice them and you're worried, speak up and insist on having your child checked, because the earlier the better. It's better to have the child checked early and see that there is nothing wrong than to wait for long and, you know, and at the detriment of getting the child an early intervention. So don't let anybody stop you and say you are worrying for nothing. Speak up for your child, be your child's advocate, and insist on having your child assessed. And also, as a parent, if you've just gotten the diagnosis, I know how it can feel to want to accept that this, when they say your child is autistic, it's not the easiest thing. However, when you eventually come to terms with it, try, and when you eventually come to terms with it, make up your mind that you are going to support your child in the best way that you can. Because for me, what I have done is I have looked around, and the things that has kept me going is I have found autistic adults that are doing amazing things. Some of them are even professors. Some of them are authors. They've written books. They are living their best lives, even with autism. And that's what keeps me going. And so I'd just like to encourage any parent out there that the diagnosis is not the end of the world. See your child first before the diagnosis, and make up your mind that you're going to give your child the best support and that they can be anything at all with your support.
Wow, I'm just smiling here and nodding, because you are such a blessing, and your child is lucky that she's got you as a mom and such an advocate for her. And yeah, I am just very, very happy that it has worked out for you as well, and you were able to accept the diagnosis, and everything is great. But thank you so much, Folashadi. It was such a pleasure to talk to you. I really, really appreciate that you shared your story with me and the listeners. And I wish you all the best, and all the best to your daughter. The best progresses in all the areas, and yeah, and hopefully speak to you again soon.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I'm so happy to have been able to share this, and hopefully I have also been able to help the parents out there to find answers that they may be looking for.
Yeah,
thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you so much, and thank you everybody for listening. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple or Google Podcasts, and other podcast providers. For more information, follow our Instagram at mastering.finland.podcast, subscribe to our monthly newsletter, and keep an eye on our website masteringfinland.com. Have a nice day, and good luck with your own Mastering Finland story. Bye.